Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. We're at beautiful Niles, Ohio. And yes, indeed, the tarp is out. Just what I wanted to see. The tarp, which wasn't out, is out now. I love watching the tarp.
This goes back to the conversation we had yesterday involving delays and getaway days.
I mean, do you realize that a major sponsorship opportunity is missed in baseball by not sponsoring the tarp?
Don't give him any ideas. That'll be coming next.
Come on, man. Sponsor the tarp. You know, it's great. And, Kevin, you have a very special guest for us all lined up and set to go, don't we?
I do. Kelly Smith-Puzo, originally from Sealands Grove, is going to be making her second trip to the Olympics. Kelly, welcome to the program. Steve Jones on the other side with Kevin Herr here. Thanks again for taking time out before you get packed.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Kelly, welcome. For you, because you've been through it before, mentally, is it a different preparation compared to the first time you went?
I don't think so. I think that, having been through it before, you kind of know what you're getting into. And you're maybe more aware of some of the things that are to come, like the media and how big it might feel, you know, the energy. But, no, I think the preparation is pretty similar, to be honest.
You said you know what you're getting into. So tell us, what are you getting into?
You know, I just think, you know, we talk a lot in our sports psychology meetings about the Olympics and what to expect and how there's no other tournament really like it. And somebody described it like you feel nerves like you've never felt in your life before. And I think for field hockey players, we don't typically play in front of huge crowds. And we're expecting crowds of up to 15,000 in London. And I think, you know, that brings about a lot of nervous energy. And so, I think that's you just have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. You do have to be mentally prepared for it. But I think at the same time, because you've been through it, it helps. For someone who grew up in Sealands Grove, how does it feel to be on that stage?
I think it's amazing. I think that just being able to represent your country and put on the jersey every day is such an honor. And to do it with a group of athletes that I really admire so greatly is it's phenomenal, and I'm just so thankful. Coming from Sealands Grove and having the support that I have back home is amazing.
For you, when did you get into the sport of field hockey, where you started to feel like there was, like, for you, something special about it that you enjoyed and felt you could make something out of it?
Yeah, I grew up playing field hockey and running track and also doing basketball in the winter, and I loved all three. I just think that I really excelled in field hockey, and so from there, I got the scholarship to college, and so it went. So I think that I didn't really realize that I might have a chance at going to the Olympics probably until I was into college and started getting invited to some of the camps.
And that makes a big difference. But your college experience, though, was a very important experience for you, because where you went to school, the competitive level was a very high level, at least in the American scene.
Yeah, I chose to go to Maryland, and, they've been pretty dominant in the field hockey world during my time and ever since. And, you know, having been coached by Missy Mahard, who's one of the legendary field hockey coaches in the nation, she really guided me. And to be honest, I was actually invited to the national team camp my freshman year in college, and I went, and I had a pretty tough experience. I just don't think mentally and from a maturity standpoint, I was ready for that. So I actually said, you know, I don't ever want to do that. And she never pushed me. You know, she was very, very patient with me. And by the time I was a senior at Maryland, she sat me down and said, okay, you think you're ready for this? And so finally I went back to the team and got picked. So
that's something that's very important, though, is that for a coach to have a feel – You know, the old saying, I'd rather play you one game too late than one game too early.
Yeah.
I mean, that really fell into place for you, didn't it?
It did, yeah. Misty was just very patient with me, and I think she also understood that I really was very invested in Maryland and loved being a college athlete there, and so I think she knew that if she pushed me too quickly that I was going to get burnt out and that I wouldn't enjoy the experience. So for me, the timing was perfect, and the support system, not just Missy, but my family and everybody around me kind of knew what I needed and when I needed what.
At the same time, you've also done some coaching along the way. How does that benefit you along the way?
Yeah, I coached. I did some volunteer work at Maryland and American and University of Virginia. I spent a season at Georgetown. So I've certainly dipped my feet in coaching. I think that once you become a coach and you start to explain the game to other people, you actually become a better hockey player. And it's like anything, you know, once you teach something, you actually understand it yourself a little bit better. So I certainly think that over time, having those experiences has helped me on the field as well.
Also, at the same time, you have to be a mom.
Yes.
So give us the time commitment and how you've been able to budget your time to be a world-class level field hockey player, but also being a world-class mom.
Oh, gosh. If you could just see our online family calendar, you might have an idea. It's pretty incredible. We created this calendar because we knew that there was no other way that we would be able to keep track of everything. And on the calendar is flights that, you know, the kids are flying from the East Coast to the West Coast and who's babysitting the kids on what day. So it's certainly been a juggling act. I would be lying if I said that I did it by myself. I mean, the support from my mom and dad and certainly my husband and the team and the coaching staff and everybody around me has just been incredible. And I've been able to have the kids out in San Diego with me a good portion of the year thanks to some babysitters and just, you know, just everybody around me has just been incredible. And it's certainly been a juggling act, and I don't know that I could have done it for much longer than I did. It was tough emotionally, too, and so I think my family's ready for that portion of our lives to be over, although it was wonderful.
Absolutely. Now, you have two sons, I believe?
Yeah. Shavi is the oldest. He's 2.5, and Ian's 10 months.
Okay. All right. What was it like? And now you're about to relate to every woman in the audience. What was it like to come off childbirth, have a new child, but then get yourself physically ready so that you're an Olympic team member?
Yeah, to be honest, I knew that if I had that mindset giving right before birth or during or after, that I would have put too much pressure on myself. So whenever I feel pressure or I get nervous, I just pretend like it's not happening. So to be honest, I didn't do much. I gave birth to the child, and I was home for those 3 months just being a mom. And I decided in December, I spoke with my national team coach, and he said, you got to get here soon if you want to give this a shot. You know, let's get the ball rolling. So I went out in December, and obviously physically it was hard. 2 days into practice, I probably did one of the toughest runs I've done in 10 years. And I really thought at that moment, like, I don't know, I'm not sure I can do this anymore. But really, the coach was so supportive. In fact, he was even running with me and during that conditioning time, and he just kept saying, just finish. It's uphill from here, just finish. And so it was uphill, and I've never done a run as hard as that first one. And so, yeah, the pieces fell into place. It wasn't easy. And there were certainly days where I thought maybe I should not be doing this, but it worked out.
Yeah, it did work out indeed. But the fact that your husband is a former Venezuelan national team field hockey member, has that really helped mentally within the family that he gets it?
Absolutely. I mean, without my husband, there's no way I would be back here. And he was the one. He doesn't just get it from a supportive standpoint, but he understands what it's like to be an athlete. He understands what it's like to be somebody that's very invested in sports and have to retire. And so I went, I need to be home with the kids. The kids need me. this is too, you know, too difficult financially. And so he said, these are bad excuses. If you can tell me you don't want to play anymore, then you can quit. And I just couldn't say it, you know, because I knew that come opening ceremonies, if I was sitting on the couch at home, I would regret it. And so, yeah, he's just been incredible.
And you came, if I recall correctly, you came back right away. You scored a couple of goals right out of the gate, didn't you?
I did. My first game back was in January against Australia, and I had 2 goals coming back that game. I don't think I played, you know, wonderful, but I was able to put the ball in the net.
Yeah, except when you score, everybody perceives the fact that you played great.
Yeah, it was even for me, it was a little bit of a confidence booster, you know, that I was still able to be productive.
It's one thing. I did Feel Hockey on the Big Ten Network last fall, and I was put on the email list, and there was a lot of excitement around the United States team and international field hockey. Do you feel like for United States field hockey, this is a great opportunity in London? Because I know the last time the United States medaled was, I believe, a bronze in 84 when Char Moret of Penn State was on that particular team in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think that we're in a pretty difficult bracket, but we're also in a bracket that, you know, anybody could take it. So I think that this is really a year where we have the opportunity to do great things and really help the sport of field hockey grow in our country. And so I think it's going to be interesting. I know NBC is covering a ton of games, and Missy Mahar is actually one of the commentators for NBC for the Olympics, and I think she's going to do a phenomenal job.
Yeah, in fact, what the United States, and this, I don't think you were involved, this is the when they beat Argentina in the Pan Am Games, that was a big step forward.
Yeah, it was huge. We've never beat Argentina in the Pan Am Games, and I remember the team saying on their way to Guadalajara that they felt that they were extremely prepared, and they had done a lot, not only on the field but off the field, to prepare for that game. And it was funny, my husband was away with his college team traveling, and so it was just me and the two boys sitting at home on the couch watching that game. And it was certainly a very bittersweet moment for me, you know. I was excited to be home with the boys and have 2 sons, but a little bit jealous as well.
How do you like the chemistry on this team? Chemistry is very important in any sport, but it's really important in field hockey. Do you sense there's a chemistry in this team as they've come together?
I do. We have, like I said, we've been working with an amazing sports psychologist, and we've been able to gel the youth of the team with some of the older players. And, you know, we have a really lighthearted group that fights really hard on the field and just enjoys life off the field. So I think it's going to be a good mix.
You have to build from the goal out. So how do you like the back end in terms of playing this thing defensively?
You know, we have Amy Tron back in the cage. She took a little bit of time off and then actually tore her ACL right before the Pan American game. So having Amy back there and having her experience is going to be huge. I think, in general, our defensive unit has just been rock solid all year, and I think that that's one of our real strengths going into these games.
You'll have to take it, and the old sports cliche is one at a time, because it's a reality. When you look at the bracket, what are the teams that are hurdles for you? And overall, what are the big hurdles within this tournament period?
You know, to be honest, I think every single team in our bracket is going to be a hurdle. South Africa is ranked below us internationally, and, you know, that's certainly a game that we have to win. But Australia is just ranked above us, and we played them back in April, and they look extremely strong. You always know that Germany and Argentina are going to be tough, and New Zealand is one of probably the fastest team in the world right now. So I think that our bracket is, it could be anybody's match. I think that they're all six teams are tough, and we do have to take it one game at a time, and we know that. But I think that's the great thing about the Olympics, is that there's no other tournament in field hockey like it. I mean, every team is tough, and every game is going to be a fight, and we're saying that we have to win one game 7 times, and if we do that, then, you know, we'll end up on the podium.
Kelly, I want to take just a moment to thank you for being with us, because I know it's an important time in your life. We congratulate you on what you've accomplished so far, on being, everyone tells us, a great mom and a great family, and we hope that you have nothing but success in London and continued success after this, of being a great mom and great life.
No, oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right, Kelly, thank you so much.
You're
Kelly
welcome.
Smith, great to have her on the show today on the United States Olympic field hockey team. Kevin, another Olympic moment for you. I know you love the Olympics. We all love the Olympics, and we will be watching field hockey with a little different view this time around because Kelly will be there. We will come back with more. As our thanks to Kelly Smith Puzo from Sealands Grove for being on the show today. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this. Welcome back, Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. A lot of thunderstorms around the area this afternoon.
No, you're not kidding.
A lot of thunderstorms. Huge line of storms rolled through the Susquehanna Valley. I would say, about a half hour ago, didn't they?
Well, you know, it was funny.
Still a bunch of them. Yeah. Some south of Williamsport right now, and some lightning strikes.
There was a lot of lightning and thunder, but not everybody saw rain from it. It was weird.
Well, you know, we specialize in weird.
That's true.
That's fine.
That's what we do
That's
best.
Fine. That's what we do.
I want to share this with you real quick, if we have a second, Steve. Kelly has a blog that we're going to be posting on stevejonesshow.com from her field hockey life page. And she said she is going to be updating it through the Olympics. So it'll be interesting to get another view of her second Olympics and how things are a little bit different for her this time around. But she has one comment here from earlier in the month that I just thought summed up what you and I talk about all the time about the Olympics. She said, I can clearly remember sitting on the family sofa with goosebumps on my extremities as I watched the U.S. delegation march into the opening ceremonies. The truth is that I didn't fully understand why I was so excited as a child during this moment, but I could feel the power through the TV. She said, now I'm the one that actually gets to wear the tailored clothing and represent the United States of America.
Yeah, well, I decided not to ask her about the beret thing.
Probably a good idea. As I said before, American athletes in Chinese uniforms looking French.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see on the radar here exactly why we're...
Why the tarps on the field?
Yeah. It's very colorful.
Well, maybe you'll get rained down, and then you won't have to come back at 3 in the morning.
No, we'll be here all night.
Sorry, I was trying to help, man. Yeah. I was trying to help you out.
No, this will not be great. It looks to me like it's going to rain hard, then clear. And yeah, see that's what I there's a big cell moving in our direction here. Let's see if I hit the play button. Let's see. Oh, look, plays the Beatles. Great. No, just kidding. But
Here Comes the Sun.
No, it's not going to be, but it's moving in this direction here. So I am safely ensconced in yonder booth.
With the air conditioning cranked.
Yeah, it's on. It's actually probably too cool in here. I'm going to turn it down a little bit during the news. But you go out there and you get hit by a blast right away. And see, this one just popped up. That's what's happened. This one just popped up. And it's loaded. It's not a big cell. It would come through here and probably be done in a half an hour. But it has some power to it. I mean, you're talking about, you know, we all can read this now. All of us can read radar now. That's why the weather guys must feel like they're going out of business. Because... you know, green, we know what that means. And then all of a sudden we see, well, yellow's not that great. But then when you see deep purple, okay.
Or puce.
I'm not moving.
Remember when we used to say, you know, if it comes this direction, it's much more worse. Or the thunderstorms always follow the river. And I remember all those little comments when I was a kid. Oh, this is going to be a bad one because it's coming from the north.
All right, exactly.
Really? Huh, I thought the last one was bad, and it came from the south. I don't know.
All right.
Hey,
But I'm in here. I'm being, you know, your opportunity to host the show solo from now on. I'm staying in here to keep that from happening.
Oh darn! Hey, have some good news on the Phillies front that we'll talk about in the next half hour. Well, maybe good news.
They're moving?
No. No. Oh. Hopefully moving out of the basement.
Yeah, I think so, too. All right. We'll talk about that. The Queen is next with the news. Barney, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Let It Be Solar Hotline is open at 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565 for the Let It Be Solar Hotline. And we're at the Sunbury Motors Studio, the mobile unit today. And the mobile unit is fired up, active, and ready, and sounds like we're in the studio, doesn't it?
It does, but I don't see you.
Ha, it's the way I prefer it. All right, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Gear, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Yes. So, yes, that's the story there. Although there is a negative to not being in the studio with you.
And that is?
I don't get an opportunity to speak with Sarah Bartlett.
Oh, my heart bleeds for you.
You know, I would like to take you back 6 months.
No, I know where you're going, and I don't want to go there.
We ran a poll.
You ran a
very
poll?
Very early on.
You spiked a poll.
On the website. Spiked what poll? You know how many people voted in that thing?
Well, not counting your 600, 599. That's how many you had. Counting your 599, there was one person that voted.
I voted one time.
If you say so, I don't believe it. Okay. Hey, did you hear the Phils have offered Cole Hamels?
Yes, I want to talk about that for a moment.
Well, may have offered.
6-year, $130 million deal. Bob Nightingale of USA Today is the one reporting it today. 6-year, $130 million deal. Okay. I say you don't go any much past this.
Nope.
I mean, to me, if he turns this deal down, then I trade him.
Yep. I don't want him at that point.
Well,
I agree.
Let me amend that. I want to go back to when Roger called yesterday. I said that if the Phillies were in a position to win, I'd keep him. Because I think the winning part is still the part of this whole thing. But if he's not going to buy and take at 6 years, $130 million, my goodness. If what Bob Nightingale is reporting is accurate, how do you turn that down?
Well, it's everything you want, and you don't have to move. The Phillies are going out on a limb and giving you that extra year that they're not normally going to do. I mean, maybe he could make a little bit more on the free agent market, but the question is it worth it? Is it worth it to make a few extra bucks when you're very happy where you're at? And he said he likes being in Philadelphia.
He's thrived there. And to his credit, I don't recall him ever having any arm trouble.
I'm not thinking of anything major. I mean, he had the normal everyday stuff.
I'm not thinking, it's interesting because we're in an interesting time of the year, and I'll amplify on that right now. It's July the 18th, right?
Yes.
So here on July 18th, we know that the trade deadline the ability to trade without waivers is the 31st. Every sports fan, baseball fan knows that. A scout for the Oakland A's was here last night. And he was talking to me about several of the Spikes prospects. He started out with Luis Heredia, the 17-year-old that's pitching tonight. Now, the Pirates gave him a 2.3 $3 million signing bonus. Right? And Heredia has pitched really well. He has the third best ERA in the New York Penn League after a month of the season. And he pitches tonight. And that scout will be here tonight. He was talking to me about his top-out number, and I said, his top-out number to me, I said, if I recall correctly, has been 91. He says, no, I don't think it's that high. And then he went back, and he had charts. He says, oh, you're right. He's 91, 91, 91. Yeah, he says, you're right. Top-out number is 91. And I was talking about his curveball and so forth, but there's no way the Pirates are trading this kid. There's no way. Then he asked me about some other guys. He asked me about Clay Holmes, and he asked me about Jason Creasy. And the only position player he asked me about was DJ Krumlick, the third baseman out of Cal Irvine, who was the ninth-round pick and has really played well. So he asked about Creasy, he asked about Holmes, he asked about Heredia, and he asked about Krumlick. Those are four players that he asked me about last night. He's a scout for the Oakland A's. Because it's this time of the year where what are you trying to acquire? But here's the big difference. That second wild card thing has made a huge difference in what we're seeing from teams as to what they can do. The A's right now are a half game out of the second wild card spot right now. Now, if they want to make a deal, if the season were to end today, the Pirates tomorrow would be playing in a one-game wild card playoff with the Atlanta of the Pirates at this point. And now, evidently building some momentum and starting to close. There are very few teams right now that are in a position, Kevin, of being sellers. Very few. And that's what I find remarkable in this particular baseball season. There aren't many teams that are in the selling mode. Now, the Dodgers have jumped out to a 1-0 lead in the Phillies. That's in the middle of the second inning. The Rockies lead the Pirates 3-1. That's in the bottom of the second at Coors. So they've jumped on James McDonald, and McDonald's been very good the last month and a half. Milwaukee leads St. Louis 4-2. That's in the bottom of the fifth. Houston and San Diego just underway at Petco. It's scoreless going to the bottom of the first inning. The Yankees lead Toronto 5-0, top of the sixth in the Bronx. And the only other American League game being played this afternoon is in Oakland, where the A's and Texas are scoreless with the Rangers just batting in the top of the first inning. Now, when you look at the teams involved right now, these are the only teams that, in my opinion, are out of it. Kansas City, Minnesota, and Seattle. Only three teams in the American League, in my opinion, are out of it. Three. That's it. I mean, I was talking to the scout from the A's. They're a half game back of Tampa Bay and Detroit right now. And Tampa Bay and Detroit would be vying. They'd have to have some sort of they'd have to figure out how to break that tie. That they'd play the Angels. But Oakland's only a half game back. The Orioles are a half game back. The Red Sox are one back of the second wild card. That's how close it is. So only, and you know, Toronto's in last place in the American League East. Do you know how far they are out of the wild card right now?
Toronto?
Two games.
I was going to say five. I didn't think it was that long.
Two. They're two. That's it. They're a game under 500. Only Kansas City, Minnesota, and Seattle are out of it in the American League. In the National League, the only teams out of it are the Cubs, Houston, San Diego, Colorado. That's it. They're the only ones out of it, in my opinion. Because the Phillies are getting people back, I'm not going to count them out of it yet.
Well, I mean, and I'm cautious. I'm cautious about this four-game win streak because I was watching the game last night, and there's a fresh kid coming up with the Dodgers on the mound, and they score one run against him. They get into the relief and then finally start to hit the ball around a little bit and win that ball game with some, by the way, a nice bunt by a pitcher. But anyway, we'll get in. That's a whole other topic. But they started to actually make contact and hit the ball, and you know, I'm still holding back in my excitement of this four-game win streak right now.
Look, they're 9 games back of the wild card. I think I said 9.5. That's incorrect. They're 9 games back of the wild card. Okay? The second wild card spot.
Right.
The second one creates a different dynamic in all this. So they're 9 back right now. And Pittsburgh's the one that holds right now the cards in the second wild card position. Atlanta's in the first wild card position. Now you're saying they bring up sometimes when you face somebody you have no scouting report on, they can get to you.
Yeah, he handled them pretty well. Yeah, he handled the Phillies pretty well early on.
But you have no scouting report on them. Okay? And again, what's one of the keys? They ended up getting to them when they went to
middle relief.
The bullpen, the middle relief, right, which, of course, Philly fans are all too familiar with. By the way, they're pulling the tarp off here. It barely rained. It's all blue sky above us now. This huge cell on the radar. It looked like it was going to come in here and, like, take a tomahawk to us. Now they're pulling the tarp off the field. I mean, I thought it was really going to be bad because they took, like, the tractors and they parked the tractors on the tarp so it wouldn't blow away. But that's what's happened. So now you get to Hamels. 6 years, $130 million. If he turns that down, I wouldn't want him anymore.
I agree.
That's absurd money. I mean, that's absurd money. And I think if they report that Bob Nightingale and if his sources are correct, and we're going to have a guy on from MLBTradeRumor.com tomorrow, by the way, as part of our show.
Love that site, by the way.
Right. Well, we're going to have one of the correspondents on tomorrow's show.
Big fan.
If Hamels turns that down, then you have to say, you know what? Who else will be free agents, and where can we take our $130 million next year?
The thing I wonder is, let's say he signs this. Are the Phillies definitely over the cap now? Because there's been some gray area about where they are, and do they care? Is a better question.
I'm not so sure if you know, they know what their bottom line is, and if their bottom line is secure, I doubt they care.
I mean, it must be by a couple of dimes and nickels.
Yeah, I mean, but still, the luxury tax, you know, if they're over, they'll have to pay it, which has been frustrating over the years for the Yankees, for example. The Yankees' frustration with the luxury tax has been simple. They don't like the fact that some teams keep it. Now, I want to tell you about the Pirates. Now, the Pirates are one of those teams, those small market teams that gets luxury tax benefits. They've been spending their money. They just haven't been spending it on free agents. They've been spending their money on the draft. I mean, that's where they've been spending money. I mentioned Heredia, $2.3 million signing bonus. There are a couple of other guys on this team that also fall into that category that have received money. And a lot of pitchers, they've given a lot of money to pitchers over the years. From Jameson Taillon, who's now rocketing up through the system for the Pirates. Gerrit Cole, the first overall pick of the draft. These are guys that all picked up big money bonuses for the Pirates. I mean, even a guy like Zach Von Rosenberg signed a $1.2 million signing bonus. So they've been taking that luxury tax money and they've been investing it in the draft. You don't just have to invest it in free agents.
If you're Cole Hamels' agent, with Hamels being in Los Angeles the last few days and L.A. being one of the teams that I'm sure looking at him very seriously, and they have some new owners that have some money to spend, do you kind of let the Phillies know that, hey, there's some interest here, if nothing else, at the end of the year? Maybe you want to pony up a few more than you originally thought. And is that why we're seeing this dollar figure a little higher than what we speculated earlier?
I believe Major League Baseball would call that tampering.
All right. Tell me it doesn't happen.
Okay. Boy, that's a good question.
I mean, I know what you're saying, but tell me that doesn't happen anyway.
Well, better not get caught doing it. How about that?
That's a different story, though. Getting caught's different. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, 6 years, $130 million is one heck of a deal. Okay? You're talking almost, not quite, but almost $22 million a year. That's pretty darn good.
I just wonder what changed the Phillies' mind. I mean, what, they were around 80 the first time around early in the season. Then we heard, okay, maybe 100, and they were like, well, you know, don't expect the Phillies to go with six. Our sources are telling us, you know, maybe 105. Now all of a sudden it's 130 and 6 years that the number's coming out. I'm just wondering what the changes are.
The difference is speculation versus reality.
That could be, yeah.
I mean, I think people have been speculating what the Phillies might offer. Oh, they won't do this, they won't do this. Ruben Amaro Jr. has not said any of that.
That's true. That's a very good point.
So there's speculation as to, based on past contracts, what they might do, what they could do, what did they do with Cliff Lee's contract, what's Roy Halladay's contract versus what. You know, so you're trying to put the pieces together, just like none of us knows what the innings limit is for Steven Strasburg. We don't, you know what I mean? None of us knows.
Yeah, we've talked about it all year, but nobody knows.
But nobody knows what it is because the Nationals haven't said. Because Ruben Amaro Jr. has never said what the parameters were going to be. So if the report is true that they finally have come through with this offer, maybe they've been thinking that the entire time, trying to gauge the market for the guy and thinking that this is what's going to keep him in Philadelphia. There's no doubt in my mind that 6 years, $130 million, I don't consider that a hometown discount.
No.
I think that is a big-time, knock-it-out-of-the-park offer that he has to seriously consider because it gives him long-term security through the age of 34 years old, which is the prime part of his career where he's going to make so much coin that he will be set for life.
Well, look at Kane, who got an unbelievable amount of money here. What, 112 and a half, 5 year extension on top of his $15 million. But he's basically a .500 career winning percentage. Hamels is at .594, and he is not in what I would call a pitcher's park at home.
No, he's not.
That's how impressive those numbers get to be.
Although a left-hander is better in that park than a right-hander.
That's true. That's true.
Okay, a left-hander has better benefit in that park. In other words, if you're at Fenway Park, for example, being a left-handed pitcher is tough because of the wall against a right-handed pull hitter. But in that park, being a left-hander in Citizens Bank Park does help you because if you would prefer to see righties try to pull something to left field, which at least gives you more of a fighting chance as opposed to being a right-hander against a left-handed hitter pulling it toward the porch and right, which now, is very nice and secure.
The question that I was thinking earlier today as I was seeing this story come out is how long do the Phillies wait to offer him this contract? Do they do this as early as tomorrow and say, listen, we need to know by Tuesday because that's a week before the deadline? Or do they go, you know what? Let's run this out until through the weekend of the 28th and 29th, because if we have to, they're thinking we can move him on the 30th and 31st rather easily.
Yeah, I don't know if you give him a deadline or not. That's interesting. I don't know. But
I mean, let's face it. Yeah, let's face it. They can move him in a day. That's not going to be a problem to get it done on the 31st before the trade deadline. There's enough teams out there that'll make him a deal. I just wonder how long they give him to sit back and think about it.
Yeah, that's a good question. But 6 years, $130 million? Wouldn't be a lot of thought on this guy's
would
part.
Would not, you know, be, I mean, thinking long.
I mean, you know, I would want to know what the clauses are in it and things like that. It's not just a simple, you know, here's a sheet of paper, you get 6 years, $130 million. But the difference between baseball and football is something that we'll talk about in a moment. Today's show, of course, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and the Lenape Solar Hotline is open at 1-800-795-9565. Our thanks, by the way, to Kelly Smith Puzo of the United States Olympic Field Hockey Team, Sealings Grove's own, for being on the Lenape Solar Hotline earlier today. We'll come back with more of the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
When you buy anything, isn't it best to see people who've been around for a long time, satisfying customers just like you all the time? Makes sense, doesn't it? So when you're in the market for a quality new or pre-owned vehicle, the only place to go is Sunbury Motors. They've been in business since 1915, partnering up folks just like you with a vehicle that best suits their needs and budget. Their service after the sale can't be beat. And if you like selection, there's none better than Sunbury Motors. Fords, Kias, Lincolns, Mercurys, Hyundais, Sunbury Motors sells them all. Their finance teams are unmatched. They'll be glad to help you secure the affordable option you want on any new or pre-owned vehicle you find on their lots. See the people who've been in business since 1915. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln Mercury, and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com.
Big difference between football and baseball, and it's been amplified by the Cole Hamels contract offer that Bob Nightingale of USA Today is reporting, of 6 years, $130 million, as opposed to the Drew Brees contract, which is 5 years, $100 million. Here's the difference, and it's a big difference. In the NFL, the Brees contract is 5 years, $100 million. You're saying, oh, wow, see that? He's going to get $20 million a year. That's not true. He will get $40 million front-loaded, and I think it's $10 million in each of the next 2 years after that. But that's the guarantee part. He is guaranteed $60 million in 3 years, including the $40 million he gets up front. The difference is that he ends up, that he has to make the team in the fourth and fifth years of the deal in order to get the money.
Oh, yeah, if that'll never happen.
I'm just saying, though, how many times have you seen a contract in the NFL, 8 years, $102 million?
That's true.
And then suddenly that player gets to a point where against the cap, they can't keep him and they get rid of him. If Hamels were to sign 6 years, $130 million, and go on the disabled list for the next 6 years, he'd get all $130 million, whether he's on the team or not. That's the difference. In baseball, every dime is guaranteed. In football, it's not.